I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Look, I've really got to get into this this interview with Alan Hunter, because this was just a great conversation. Alan Hunter was one of the original VJs on MTV, and I love the story behind the first night MTV went on the air. So I asked Alan, take us back to that day, because we were watching live, and yet it was all pre-recorded, right?
Well, it was pre-recorded. I think the cat has long been out of the bag that we weren't sitting there actually at 4 a.m. We did record them a day in advance or so. But we put that whole first day or two together. And then in order to watch the launch, because they did not have it in Manhattan where we all lived, that cable system, like a lot of major market cable systems, didn't carry MTV. They didn't know what it was. They didn't believe in it. So it was probably a couple of million people that were able to watch MTV in the country that first few minutes. We had to haul out in a yellow bus to this crappy bar restaurant in New Jersey to watch the rocket blast off like the rest of America. We had a little party, 200 people from the, you know, from the office, from the studio, and we watched the rocket blast off. We all thought Mark Goodman was going to be the first because it was scripted for him to introduce himself and the rest of us. But because there were actual videotapes that were put into a machine, it got reordered, and mine got put in first, so I was the first VJ by mistake. Pissed Mark off to this day, and I understand he's going to be on a little bit later and talk about it.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to Mark. I got contact information from Rick Springfield before his show in Biloxi over the weekend.
Isn't that nice? I could have given you that contact information. I'll tell you where he lives, the time he's in.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit later. Alan, take us through the audition for MTV, and what experience did you have leading up to that?
Oh my God! Well, I went to New York to be an actor. I went to Circle in the Square Drama School in 1980, and I wanted to be on Broadway. I mean, I came out of school in theater and went to New York to seek my fortune. You know, so I was going to movie auditions and Broadway show auditions. I had just gotten finished doing a Midsummer Night's Dream, a new wave punk rock version of Shakespeare's Finest.
Wow.
Lower East Side. Yours truly in tights, basically being a dancer in this crazy, weird version of it. I also was in a David Bowie video, which was really cool. The song is for fashion. And I was in this video 3 months prior to getting a job at MTV. Nobody knew what videos were, but huge David Bowie fan. So to me, that was kind of prescient that I was in a video for David Bowie. And then I bumped into somebody who started MTV. A guy's name was Bob Pittman, and we had some familial connectivity, and he said, you know what, you should come and audition for this thing. I said, what is this thing? He said, videos 24/7. I was like, huh? I don't even understand that.
So Alan, initially you're an actor, and initially you're asked to, you know, be on this new thing where you're introducing music videos. Did you think that was a step down?
Well, no, because I had no work at all, and I was totally poor.
Okay.
So anything that was going to pay me any amount of money was a step up. You kidding me? I was a starving actor in New York, waiting tables and bartending. Just trying to live hand to mouth until I made the big break. Did I think it was a redirect of my career? Yeah. But I will say this, nobody knew what the beast was. MTV had probably a year's worth of looking for people to host the show. They didn't really know what the beast was, but obviously they looked for a lot of radio people, and they decided finally that not every radio person looks good for television.
Amen.
So then they went around to, you know, artists, and Kevin Cronin of REO Speedwagon talks about being asked by MTV to be a VJ. So I was a very last minute hire. I came in as an actor. Again, they were looking for everybody. So they were really desperate by the time they came to me. That's my opinion, because my auditions were not that great. But, you know, I knew how to sit in front of a camera and read a teleprompter. I loved music. I wasn't used to talking extemporaneously about music like a journalist, but I loved music and I had the enthusiasm and I could tell a good joke. So they hired me.
How long did it take, Alan, for MTV to sort of drop the scripted teleprompter and let you guys ad-lib more? How long did that take?
Pretty much immediately. I mean, the whole thing, you just can't believe how much it was a work in progress, an experiment at all times. That whole first year, really, it was held together by duct tape. I mean, people think it was this big thing that shot out of the box, fully formed, but it wasn't at all. Every day, a plant would move around the set because some some executive said, "I don't like that Bacchus plant, move it around," and then the teleprompter would go away and it would come back again. We did sit in front of it reading scripts, and then they decided it looked so stale that then they just let us play around a little bit. So it was a weird television that, you know, 2 a.m. to watch these talking heads.
Yeah.
And one like me mess with the camera. Like the videos, I felt we could play and have fun.
You know, I was in radio at the time, and I just thought it was brilliant. And there was talk that the song would prove to be a prophetic. Video killed the radio star, and there were people who were saying that MTV was going to kill radio, but that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Did you think that this was going to replace radio?
No, I didn't at all. I don't think anybody realized how much it would help the music business. You know, end of the 70s, early 80s. The music business was in terrible shape.
Yeah,
people were not selling albums like they used to. Radio was trying to figure itself out. I don't think MTV was trying to save anybody's hide. But when they came on and people started watching it, the record companies understood that if you didn't have a video on MTV, you weren't going to sell any records. So the emphasis on only touring to make a buck and selling, you know, units of albums became a whole different ballgame when you had a video on MTV. Look, there's certainly examples of videos that probably kept a not so great song alive a little longer than it should have, or the other way, it probably tarnished of someone's career. Take Billy Squier, for instance.
Yes.
I mean, you know, it happened. But I think it was an enhancement. I think people loved it. Certainly, they went out and bought the album, and they went to see the bands live in concert. So, you know, it absolutely did not kill anything. It invigorated everything.
But that video for "Rock Me" by Billy Squier, I mean, you know, you look back on that. I mean, that was kind of embarrassing. And everybody thought he was gay from the video.
I know, but I thought it was so unfair. The video is kind of Nancy, but it's a great song. And I love Billy Squier. It wasn't fair that he. You know, he took it on the chin for that.
All right, if you're just tuning in, we're talking to one of the original VJs on MTV. Today on the anniversary, the 41st anniversary of MTV launching, Alan Hunter is on the phone with us. Alan, Martha Quinn talked about how close you all were. Were you really that close?
We were and still are. I mean, JJ, our dear friend and fifth VJ, passed away in 2004. That was really traumatic for all of us. He was kind of the father of the group. I mean, we were a disparate bunch, no doubt. We came from different walks of life. The two that got along the best, I think, were Nina and I. She was an actress as well, so we kind of related in that way. Martha was the, you know, the girl next door darling. Mm-hmm. JJ and Mark were the veterans. Mark and I did not like each other in the beginning because I thought he was an asshole and he thought I was a nerd.
Oh. But
we later came to know each other really well and we're best buddies. We all keep in contact, you know, via email, and we got a project coming up that we're working on. So it's kind of like we went through, you know, we went through the war together.
Yeah. How quickly did you start to feel the effects of being on this new music television channel?
Yeah. Not overnight. This was not a sitcom on NBC that was a smash hit in the next week. You know, it's huge. It started out with a couple of million viewers. And, you know, by the time I left in 87, 40 million people could watch MTV. That first couple of months, we didn't have a clue as to how it was being perceived in the rest of the country until we began to go out. About 3, 4, 5 months, they would send us out on a promotional appearance. We'd go to Iowa, somewhere in the heartland, and go to a record company, a record store, and 1,000 kids were there. We all have the same story. We arrive in a limo or a Volkswagen supplied by the local cable company because they didn't have any money back then.
Right.
And there's 1,000 people standing in line to get our autographs. It made no sense to me. But it's because they were all watching MTV, glued to it. Year one, when MTV was available in New York and L.A., and all the cable companies started picking it up because of the I Want My MTV campaign, then the ball game changed. And it started to be, we started to be recognized everywhere, and I could get a decent seat at a New York restaurant.
What was your biggest surprise about your gig on MTV?
Wow, how I lived to tell any tales at all. I mean, we were the face of the channel. We represented what was going on in the music business. We were nothing but traffic cops. But I think we were more enmeshed in what was going on. There's no doubt we partied at night and then had to be in the studio the next day. We were definitely burning candles at both ends. And I think that's, at least for me, what gave me kind of a good vibe on television. I knew what I was talking about when I was talking about partying with Bono. And that doesn't mean I was the same stature as Bono or right. the Rolling Stones or Duran Duran. But we were the faces of the channel. They knew us. When we were out yeah. and about, they'd say, "Hey, Mark Goodman, how you doing?" Because they watched it, you know. So it was amazing.
Well, yeah, it was interesting that I'm talking to Rick Springfield Friday backstage before the show, and I'm telling him, you know, that you know this interview is going to be part of our show Monday, and I'm going to talk to Alan Hunter, and he said, "Wait, what about Mark Goodman?" So he obviously has a relationship with Mark Goodman.
The two of them are kissing buddies. Come on, they're yeah. like tight. They're like pals and all this. It's obnoxious.
I'm glad I got the information. information from Rick to get a hold of Mark. So were you ever on MTV totally hungover?
Yes, I was. I know that sounds terrible, but it's in the book, so it's been already, it's out there in the public. Look, we were all pretty professional, and we had to be. We had a daytime damn job. It's like people who do morning shows.
Yeah.
You know, eventually you got to get up and go in and do the show. I remember the first late night I spent was at the Ritz in New York. I had to interview the Psychedelic Furs and didn't know they were going to not get on until 1:30 in the morning. So I was up very late. I got in the next morning. The interview was at 10 o'clock. Now, a band can come in hungover, but the host of the show is not supposed to be bleary-eyed. That was one of my first examples. Another time, I partied too hard one Thursday night. I partied on a school night, as we used to call it, and I came into my apartment at about 6:30 in the morning. I had an 8 o'clock call. I showered and I was still buzzing from whatever I did the night before, trying to get through my damn show. And because the crew and we were all such family, they knew I was hurting.
And wow.
I got a terrible cold, and they were like, "Yeah, right," but. Not that often, though. No.
There was a social consciousness about MTV. There was a choose or lose, and it was encouraging young people to register, and that was during the 1992 campaign with George sure. Bush Sr. and as the incumbent and Bill Clinton as the challenger. Bill Clinton accepted a town hall on MTV. Bush refused to come on MTV. Is that why he lost?
Well, I asked Bill Clinton if it's the reason he won. Rocking the Vote was certainly something. It was kind of like having a video on MTV. Refuse to yeah. do that and you may not sell any albums. I think MTV, you know, did find its social conscience with Live Aid, first off. But they knew that they had this audience that they could Pied Piper to do other things beyond just our little bubble of music. And I think it wasn't that they were being socially responsible necessarily, but it was kind of the right thing to do. And I think it was another way to engage their young audience to say, let's go and rock the vote. But you can bet the executives at MTV, you know, were palling mm-hmm. around with some politicians, and they decided that would be yeah. a good thing to get into.
What was the first video of a black artist that aired on MTV?
Well, we had several. We had Gary U.S. Bonds. We had Garland Jeffries. They playing kind of mainly rock and roll. I mean, the controversy that started with Michael Jackson coming on in 1983 was appropriate and right. It was right that MTV got busted for thinking that there was only this small little genre of music that we played and it was rock and roll. Then why did you have Culture Club or Daryl Hall and John Oates singing soul mm-hmm. music and in a style from Motown in the 60s, you know, Great American Songbook, but we didn't play the artists who actually, mm-hmm. you know, were singing those songs. Now, we wouldn't play anything beyond kind of the 80s genre. Obviously, we wouldn't play 60s Philly. But why couldn't we play Lionel Richie? Why couldn't we play, you know, Rick James had a major beef about it. But the guys that were programming it were basically radio programmers. You know the deal. Mm-hmm. Their bailiwick was rock and roll. And however that was, you know, determined what that genre was, that's what they thought they were playing. What they didn't know, and Mark will tell you the same thing, I don't think they knew the power they had. They had the power to play whatever the F they wanted to play. Mm-hmm. We could have played a wide variety of music, and the audience would have gone right along with this. They didn't know the power they had.
But that was the interesting thing about MTV, is that I remember, you know, in radio, there were songs that were not getting on radio stations because of tight formats, and all of a sudden MTV comes on, and MTV puts these videos on, and that pressures radio stations to start putting songs on that they weren't going to put on before the videos came out.
Absolutely. It could be as innocuous as the Stray Cats, or really, come on, the new wave with Duran Duran and U2 and all the kids were showing up at the local record store saying, "I want that Duran Duran album." And the guy's going, "Who? where are you seeing this music?" And they said, "On MTV."
Yeah. But was Billie Jean the first, by Michael Jackson, was that the first black artist music video?
No. I'm saying that there were other black artists that were playing before that. Gary U.S. Bond Garland Jeffries were black artists. They were playing more rock and roll, not pop and not R&B, sure.
Yeah.
But there were faces. We had an early Prince song on that was may not have come on before Michael. I get my chronology off. Mm-hmm. But he's the one who certainly broke the pop song barrier. Mm-hmm. And to me, he just happened to be black. I think the issue was less about his skin color and more about his style of music. It was pop, and he thought they were rock and roll. None of us were real privy to that. What was going on in the boardrooms, and that's really upper level executives talking to record company executives and threatening one another, you know, like, "You better start playing it." When it happened, we all felt it was the right thing, and it was a very quick sea change at that point. So I don't defend or support the decision not to play them, but I certainly think MTV very quickly said, "Oh, thank God we're opening the floodgates now for all this different stuff."
Alan, talk about what you're doing now.
Well, I've been on Sirius XM for, I guess, almost 15 years now. Mark and I are marveling that we've had a job this long. Started out to be a very part-time thing for me years ago. I had a film company and was rocking with that. But it's been kind of a funny bookend to our career. I started off announcing songs, and now I'm doing that again. I never was in radio, so I had to get used to the microphone.
Yeah.
I use my hands a lot, and there's no TV camera on me. Why do I have arms?
So briefly talk about the difference between television and radio. What added pressures do you feel on radio that you didn't feel on television?
To be succinct and to be clear, I think for all of us, when people come up to us to this day that maybe don't listen to me on Sirius, they say, "I didn't really recognize you because you're shorter than Mark Goodman, but I recognized your voice on MTV, and I think, wow, that is so weird." And they'll also have memories of things we said on the, "I remember that time you said something about, you know, Bruce Springsteen or Cyndi Lauper," and I go, "You remember the things we said?" So that was weird to be on television, to have people really only care about what you said.
Yeah, it's amazing the things that people will remember about what you've said.
It is. Well, you got to be careful, you know, certainly in what you do every day, because they will. And I think that I felt more naked being on the radio, to be honest. I have come to love it, because I can literally be naked and do the radio every day.
Yeah.
And I can do it in my own home, because we're working remote these days.
Yeah.
So I love radio. I like working the mic, you know.
Cool. Alan Hunter, it has been a pleasure to talk to you on this, the 41st anniversary of MTV going on the air, and you were the first face that we saw, and we'll talk to you again, Alan.
I hope so, and thanks for celebrating number 41. I almost forgot, and have fun talking to Mark Goodman.
All right, Alan Hunter, one of the original VJs on MTV. Thanks for your time.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.